What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Boot Up, the LSU basketball podcast. I'm Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics. Back after a personal week off, spent the last weekend on a cruise ship. Took my wife on a little post-football season cruise to kind of commemorate all the time that she has to sacrifice when I'm traveling for football. So it's one of the things I think gets lost in this business is, the coaches especially, but coaches and players and everybody, you spend so much time on the road, and I only spend a fraction of it on the road compared to what some of them do, but it takes a toll on families, the wives, and especially when you have young kids like I do. You need a spouse that's very supportive and strong and independent. So thank God my wife is, and I wanted to kind of reward her with a little post-football season present. So we went on a little cruise last week, and in fact, I was on the boat for Thursday and Friday, got off the boat Saturday, and got Wi-Fi for the first time. And so I checked the score of the LSU-Auburn game, and there was only a few minutes left, and LSU was up 71-63. And because Wi-Fi is not cheap, I turned it off thinking, okay, LSU's won a basketball game. And then I got back to the mainland Monday morning and checked my phone and saw that LSU had, in fact, not won that game. So it was an interesting welcome back to land for me, and certainly a disappointing loss for LSU at the end of a disappointing week. Two losses to Vanderbilt and Auburn, which the Vanderbilt loss, not pretty. You go on the road to the team with the worst record in the conference and lose. That's not great. Never a good loss. And then the Auburn game, LSU played a lot better and played much better in that game, but wasn't able to hold on for that against a good team in a very tough environment, a tough break. Will Wade said after the game, I don't have audio of this comment. I do have more audio coming in the show, but he talked about how he felt this team played well enough in that game to win, that they played really well. And he put that loss on his shoulders and didn't call timeouts at the end of the game that he felt like he should have used. And another tough loss for LSU. But they righted the ship. That's not a ship pun, since I was just talking about cruises. That was accidental. They righted the ship against Missouri on Tuesday in a game that wasn't pretty for the first half, especially defensively for LSU. But in the second half, they came out a lot stronger, a lot more energy, a lot more aggression defensively, and closed down the stretch. The star of that game to me, in addition to Skylar Mays, who continues to make his case for SEC Player of the Year, was Darius Days. I wrote about Darius Days after the game. You all know, if you've been listening to this show, you know how much I love Darius Days. He was phenomenal in that game. The biggest thing was he stayed out of foul trouble in that game and was able to stay on the floor. And it was a second straight good game. He played well against Auburn. He played really well against Missouri and was the difference in that game. Had 20 points, 10 rebounds, had a bunch of big shots. He had the three-pointer that broke a 69-all tie with about 4:44 left on the clock, I believe. And he also had the shot at the end of the game to kind of ice it after he picked up a shot that had gotten blocked. Threw up one of his kind of patented 12-foot baby hooks that's really not an efficient shot for anybody in the country, except for Darius Days, who, by the way, is number two in the country in two-point field goal percentage. You all know I love Darius Days. I think he's a potential SEC Player of the Year if he sticks around for a few years, and he continues to be one of the most efficient players in the country. I'm looking at his numbers right now. He's 12th nationally in offensive rating. He is, like I said, second in two-point shooting. Everything he does is efficient, and then obviously he gets on the glass, and he's a top 50 rebounder in the country in terms of offensive rebounding percentage. He's top three in the SEC. He's just this rare combination of efficiency and effort, which you don't get a lot in college basketball players. A lot of efficient guys don't give you that kind of bulldog mentality. A lot of guys with that bulldog mentality aren't always the most efficient offensive players, but Darius Days certainly is, and he really broke out against Missouri and was able, as Will Wade said after the game, to put two games together back-to-back, which I think is the most important thing for Darius, staying out of foul trouble, staying on the floor, and making the impact that he can make. So that was good to see. Like I said, Skylar Mays had another big game, 23 points, continues to be extremely efficient, just 11 shots to get there, 8-9 at the free throw line, made big plays, had the beautiful Euro step at the end to lay it in. So I'll talk about that a little bit later. In fact, this episode's a little bit different. I was hoping to get Tyrus back, Tyrus Thomas, who I'm hoping to make kind of a regular guest here. He had to go to the dentist yesterday, I think for a root canal. So that, yeah, just prayers for him. Root canals are never fun. But obviously, he couldn't do the show yesterday dealing with that root canal. So we'll try to get him back next week instead of talking with Tyrus. I'm going to talk for a little bit using some Will Wade audio. And then at the end, I'm going to play a radio spot that I did on Thursday with the guys over at 104.5 in Baton Rouge on Off the Bench, Jordy and T-Bob. They called me up Thursday morning, and we talked a little basketball for about 10 minutes. So I'll play that at the end, and there may be some overlap in topics, but I think you'll enjoy that conversation as well. Sometimes it's nicer to be asked the questions than to be the one asking the questions or driving the conversation. Sometimes it's nice just to be the guest. So you'll get a little bit of a different perspective on that one. Let's start today's show with a few audio clips from Will Wade's press conference on Thursday. Some things that stood out to me. One, the biggest one, is the news of the day. Charles Manning is back. Thank God Charles Manning is back for multiple reasons. Again, if you've listened to the show, you know I love Charles Manning. I love his game. I love how efficient he is on offense, but I really love what he gives you defensively. And I love the domino effect that he can have on this team. And before I get to that, let's play some audio from Will Wade talking about Charles Manning returning to the team.
You know, we should have Charles Manning back. He had a good workout yesterday. His recovery's going well. He had a good workout this morning. We'll see how he reacts in practice the next couple of days. But if everything goes as scheduled, we'll have him back. He'll probably be on a minutes restriction, so he won't be able to play, you know, 20, 30 minutes. But we don't need that. We just need a little bit of help. And hopefully we can get him back going a little bit.
Look for Manning to play about 10 to 12 minutes against Alabama on the road this weekend. Even that little addition is extremely helpful for this team. Now, ideally, Charles gets back to where he's healthy enough to play 20 to 25 minutes a game. He can add another double-figure scoring threat to this team, which I think is huge. If you look at the last couple of games, LSU's been just crushed in bench points. It's been tough for them to find scoring outside of their top five. Now, the caveat to that is that they have five guys in the starting lineup who can get double figures on any given night. So it's hard to knock that. There aren't many teams in the country that can do that. In fact, I think last I checked, LSU was the only team in the country with five players all averaging 11 points per game or more. That may have changed. That was a couple games old. But that just goes to show you the balance they have in the starting lineup. But the converse point to that is the fact that LSU hasn't had much bench scoring. I'm trying to pull up the stats right now to look at the exact numbers, but I remember it was pretty drastic over the last couple games. Here is LSU and Missouri bench points. Missouri outscored LSU off the bench 23-2. Let's go look at the Auburn game as well. This is great podcast content, me clicking through stats that I should have pulled up before. Yeah, Auburn outscored LSU 23-6 off the bench. That's pretty drastic in the last two games, and I haven't even pulled up the Vanderbilt game, but I imagine that was pretty drastic as well. And so Charles Manning getting back will give LSU that other guy, once he gets up to the right number of minutes, that can be a scoring threat off the bench, that can give you double-figure scoring. He's also going to help, obviously, defensively in a number of ways. One, he's just really good defensively by himself. Two, there's a knock-on effect to getting him back. Because of the lack of scoring depth, and look, all credit to Andre Hyatt, who's come in and played his role very well. He hasn't been able to knock down shots, but if you look at his plus-minus, I think his plus-minus in the last game was like plus 16 or something. It was something crazy. I mean, every time he comes in, the scoreboard moves the right direction because he does so many little things well. But he hasn't been able to offer a ton of scoring. Marshall Graves has come in and done a nice job. He had a big defensive play against Missouri where he was a shield on the fast break and altered a shot that would have been a layup for Missouri. Instead, they missed it, and LSU went the other way and scored. Marshall can come in and knock down shots, but he hasn't really done that of late. The scoring burden has fallen, obviously, to the top five guys. But Charles comes in and gives you another guy that can score. But he also has this knock-on effect defensively that I think is huge. And it's something that Will Wade talked about at length. Because so many guys have been playing in unnatural positions or playing in unnatural roles to compensate, you've had Trendon Watford playing almost as a five at times when he's, as Will Wade's about to say, more of a three than a five. You've had Marlon Taylor, who was one of LSU's best defenders last year, but he was guarding threes and fours last year, and now he's had to guard ones and twos. The effect of getting Manning back is that you get guys back in their natural spots. You can get Skyler and Javante some rest because Manning can rotate in at the two, and then you can have one of Skyler or Javonte on the bench. There's just a huge domino effect, and Will Wade talked about it at length. I'll try to edit this clip down because it's pretty long, but Will Wade talked about that at length, just the domino effect getting Charles Manning back.
Well, we've had to shuffle some things and play guys out of position. We've had some guys that have been, you know, unbelievably unselfish. There's lineups where we have Trendon Watford out there at the five. You know, he's a lot closer to a three than he is a five. He starts at the three because we've got to have some length out there, but he's better matchup-wise at the four. You know, there's a lot of guys that are, you know, kind of doing some different things for us to help us out because of the situation we're in. And some of the issues that we have are not our players' fault. I mean, you know, we've had lineups out there. When you look at the Vanderbilt game and the Auburn game, where we've had Andre Hyatt at the two, Marlon at the three, I mean, that's not their fault. I mean, asking, and I love Hyatt, and he's going to be a great player for us, but asking him to guard a two guard in our league it's tough. I mean, it's tough if he doesn't have a knee brace on. You know what I'm saying? And asking Marlon to guard point guards off the bounce in our league is tough. Like, he was a heck of a defender for us last year, but he shut down other teams' threes and fours. And that's what I'm hoping Manning can get us back to where, all right, Marlon, you go take away their three or their four men. Don't let them get the shot off. You do what you do. Don't let them get the shot off. Because he can get up on those guys, contest the shot, and they still can't get by him because he's just quicker than them and more athletic than most of them. You got him on a point guard, he's got to stay back because those guys can go by him, and then you're just late contesting a shot. And if you got a good point guard who can make a shot off the bounce, that's a tough cover. That's not Marlon's fault. So hopefully with Charles, you know, we got somebody who can guard that ball, guard those ones and twos. We can move Marlon back to guarding those threes and fours and shutting those guys down. And, you know, when he's in when he's in that position, he can get back to making those two or three plays a game that nobody else on the court makes. And so, you know, that's where we've got to get back to.
One more thing that Will Wade pointed out, and you'll hear me talk about this in the radio interview with Jordy and T-Bob. I was getting a little frustrated in the first half watching LSU guard Missouri, as we all were, as everyone in the PMAC and everyone watching on TV and everyone on the bench was, and even the players themselves, because not necessarily because Missouri was making so many threes, although that was part of it, and LSU struggled to defend the three-point line in recent games, but LSU just didn't seem like they were being aggressive enough at the point of attack defensively. They weren't generating enough ball pressure. They were allowing way too much middle penetration, which, again, I talk about this in a little bit, but middle penetration just kills a defense in basketball. If you allow your man to drive to the middle of the floor, it forces the defense to rotate. It gets you out of position, leads to open shots. And so there was a lot of that going on in the first half against Missouri, and then all of a sudden LSU comes out in the second half, and they fix that problem. They're much more aggressive at the point of attack. There's more ball pressure. There's less middle penetration. And Missouri couldn't score as well. As a result, I think they only hit 2 3-pointers after halftime, after hitting maybe 7 in the first half or something like that. And so I was getting a little frustrated watching it and just curious why LSU defensively, because I know that they coach that and I know they work on those things. And so I was trying to figure it out in my head. And Will gave this answer in his press conference on Thursday, and it unlocked it for me. It made me open my eyes and made me realize that I'm pretty decent as a guy that played basketball and grew up in a household full of coaches and played in college. I'm pretty good at identifying the problem and what the team is doing wrong, but I'm not great at figuring out the reason why, basically because you have to be inside the building to figure out why. And with Will Wade, there's always a reason why. There's always a reason why his teams are doing certain things. Even if it's maybe not working as well as you'd like it to, there's a reason why they're doing a certain thing. And so he had a great explanation, a great highlighting of why LSU was defending Missouri that way and why they've defended that way in recent games with not quite as much ball pressure, allowing more three-point shots. And it's certainly going to be important against Alabama, who, by the way, just hit 22 three-pointers in a game against Auburn. It's certainly going to be important that LSU defends the three-point line well in that game. But the reason they've struggled a little bit from the three-point line was really interesting, really eye-opening for me. Here's Will Wade talking about exactly what LSU's been doing defensively, why they've been struggling to defend the three-point line, and why maybe they can fix that going forward.
Not taken up for our defense, but, you know, the one thing we do well defensively is we don't foul. We're 22nd in the country and not fouling. Well, we have to design our defensive schemes around we don't have a lot of players. And so, you know, what we're doing? Is that what we'd love to be doing? And do we think that's the best way to guard every team each night? No. But, you know, the number one thing when we design our defense to stop any team is, all right, how can we keep our guys out of foul trouble and try to keep the ball in front? And that's why our three-point defense is so bad, is because we have to keep the ball in front. You got to give something up. Well, you're least likely to foul on a three-point shot. Now, we foul on three-point shots. We fouled on one at Auburn, and, you know, you foul a little bit. So, you know, part of our defensive issues are designed around, we just can't be as aggressive as we want to be because we're trying to, you know, the only good stat we have defensively is we don't foul. Not the only good, but probably the best stat that we have defensively is we don't foul. And so, you know, when you go into a game designing your defense around how can we not foul, you're going to give up some stuff. And that's been, you know, part of the problem with our defensive struggles.
That will obviously be huge against Alabama, like I said, who just hit 22 three-pointers against Auburn. Was really unfortunate not to win that game. And if you look at Alabama's underlying metrics, they're a really good basketball team. Going into that Auburn game, they were, I think, 40th in the net or maybe in the 30s in the net. So they're kind of on the bubble right now, even though they're 13-11 and 5-6 in the SEC. That's going to make them really hungry for this game because they need a quad one win. LSU will give them, I believe it's going to be a quad one opportunity for them. Maybe not, since LSU is the visiting team. But it's going to be a borderline quad one win opportunity for Alabama, and it's certainly a very, very good resume booster. If you look at their numbers, they're a really good basketball team. They're better than their record indicates. They're extremely efficient on offense. They're 36th in the country in offensive efficiency. They play really, really fast, third nationally in tempo, sixth nationally in average possession length. Obviously, they shoot a lot of three-pointers. 47.8% of their field goal attempts are three-pointers, but they also get to the free throw line and score a lot at the free throw line as well. So it's a interesting balance, but it's efficient offensive basketball. It's modern offensive basketball. Jaden Shackelford has played really well lately. He played well against LSU at home. Kyra Lewis played well in that second half. He kind of drives them. If he gets going like he did in the second half, against LSU shut him down in the first half. If he gets going in the second half like he did, he could be a problem. John Petty did not shoot well against LSU last time. He'll probably have a better shooting game. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the country at 45%. He's hit 74 threes already this year in 23 games. So he's hitting almost three-pointers a game. He's really dangerous. Alex Reese always scores against LSU. He's one of those guys, like I was thinking about this the other day, there's a subset of guys who always play well against LSU. Like Saban Lee for Vanderbilt always plays well against LSU. Alex Reese always plays well against LSU. That'd be like a fun little project to kind of put together a team of players who just always seem to play their best against LSU. Alex Reese is definitely on that team. He might be the captain of that team. Herb Jones is going to be back for Alabama. He played a little bit against Auburn. He's got a broken left hand, I think, but he's a problem, man. He's this, you know, a big 6'7" long athlete who kind of can play a little point guard stylistically, can guard a number of positions. So it's a really good, really good basketball team. It's not the deepest team, but they're getting deeper. I think Beadle Bolden will be back. He didn't play against LSU last time, but he can hit threes. He went off in the first half against Auburn. So it's a tough matchup for LSU, and one that they're going to have to defend the three-point line, obviously, really, really well and better than they have been. In fact, if you want to look at the numbers, you probably don't want to hear these numbers, actually. But in three-point defense right now, LSU is 236th nationally, allowing opponents to shoot 34.3%. And in conference play, it's up to 36.3%, which is last in the SEC. And in addition to that, and again, like I said, you probably don't want to hear these numbers, but they're information you may want to know. LSU is allowing opponents to shoot 44.5% of their attempts from beyond the arc. That's 13th in the SEC. So they're conceding a lot of three-pointers, and teams are making a lot of three-pointers. And if Alabama makes a lot of three-pointers on Saturday, it's going to be very, very difficult for LSU in an arena. That's hard to say, in an arena where LSU has had not a lot of success. I think Will Wade was talking about this at the beginning of his press conference, but not very many wins in that arena recently for LSU. I remember Jordan Mickey, I think, going there one year and having a big game and getting a win. I think LSU won their last year, obviously, because they were undefeated on the road in SEC play. But historically, LSU has not had a lot of success in Tuscaloosa playing on the basketball court. A little more success in football, as you remember from this year. But basketball has been a struggle to go up there and get some wins. So it's going to be a tough environment. It's going to be a good team, And it's a big game for LSU. They're tied atop the SEC right now. They got to keep winning. They got to keep holding serve with Kentucky looming on Tuesday. Speaking of that, I think I'll try to get back maybe Monday and do another episode before that Kentucky game, since it is such a big game, since it is a home game. I'll try to get back maybe Monday, and if I get Tyrus, I'll get Tyrus. If not, I'll get something else going for that. But that'll do it for me today on the show. I'm going to go ahead and throw it to my interview with Jordan T-Bob on Off the Bench and give you just a little bit extra basketball content. So until next time, enjoy this interview, and we'll see you next time on Boot Up.
Cody Worsham, Boot Up Podcast, which you can catch keeping up with the LSU basketball team, coming off the fall podcast, which was spectacular, following the 15-0 national championship. Do you sleep, my friend? Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I don't sleep, but mostly because I have a 4-year-old that likes to keep me up like past 10, and then a 2-year-old that likes to wake me up at like 4:30. So that's the only reason that I don't sleep.
T-Bob's got number 2 on the way, and Rivers has number 2 on the way as well. So
good luck to both of you.
A little, a little intimidated by it, but, you know, black minivan.
You should be.
Cody, Charles Manning Jr. may be back tomorrow. Before we talk about where they've been, what they've accomplished with Manning out, what could he provide if he's available tomorrow?
Saturday. Yeah. If nothing else, a pair of healthy legs and some rest for the rest of the guys on the team. Of the strengths of this team, depth is not one of them. If you look at the bench points the last couple games, it's been heavily tilted toward the opposition, and that's because, frankly, the guys LSU are bringing off the bench aren't really scorers, and that's partly a product of the fact that the five guys that they start are scorers. So they're, what, the only Division I team in the country with five guys averaging 11 points as of a couple of games ago. But the flip side is that without Manning, they really haven't had anybody to come in off the bench and provide some scoring. So he'll give some of those guys rest. If he's healthy, he can score. But most importantly, he can guard and he can defend. And this is a team that, you know, the two games last week and then the first half on Tuesday just looked atrocious defensively. Yeah. And they turned it up in that second half against Missouri. But Missouri's not a very good offensive team. So, and Alabama is. I don't know if y'all watched that game last night, but it was a three-point shooting contest. Yeah. And LSU's not defended the three-point line well. So that's going to be a big challenge. And having Manning there is going to be
59 three-pointers last night for Alabama. I believe
attempted, 22 made.
22 made.
I believe both of those are SEC records, to my understanding. But last time you squared up with this team, though, Brody, Alabama, I mean, that's what they wanted to do. In that 90-76 win from LSU in the PMAC, Alabama shot it 38 times from beyond the arc, but they only made 10 of them. What was the key last game against the Tide to controlling that perimeter?
First of all, I think you called me Brody, which is you're channeling your podcast mode.
I'm not feeling great. Okay. I know I am. I am. I apologize, Cody.
you're really going to struggle with the second kid. I'm just telling you now. What was the question again? I think you asked me about three-point shooting. What did LSU
do? Alabama shot a million of them. But last time against LSU, they shot 38, but they only made 10. What was the key in the first matchup to kind of control in the perimeter?
Probably luck. Probably luck, because Alabama is a better three-point shooting team than that. And you heard Will Wade go off last week about – he didn't go off, but he talked about last week about how three-point defense is kind of – it's one of those stats that there's a lot of variance with. And I heard some pushback on those comments, but he's right. I mean, there are better three-point defensive teams, and like you saw that simply just with effort in the second half against Missouri. In the first half, LSU would close out the shooters and then just not really contest the shot. And in the second half, they were contesting the shots, and that that made the difference. So this isn't really an LSU team that, you know, defensively gets killed in rotations. It's not like they're, you know, guys are scrambling around to three-point shooters and other teams are getting wide open looks. But they do some little things that I think they've got to get better at. They allow way too much middle penetration, where if you know, in basketball, middle penetration kills your defense because it forces you to rotate. The ball reverses. You've got to switch sides of the court. And they did that a ton in the first half of Missouri. They just kept getting in the middle of the paint, and kicking it out to shooters. And so LSU's got to take that away. And I think they did that pretty well against Alabama, particularly Kyra Lewis. They bottled him up in the first half. And that was the key. Now Kyra kind of went off in the second half, and that was Alabama started to make that little comeback, and then LSU kind of kept them at bay. But if That's going to be the key. Take away the middle of the floor. Don't let them keep reversing the ball, and get in the paint and kicking out. If you can do that, they're still going to launch a bunch of threes. They're going to make some, but you can minimize the damage.
Cody Worsham from LSU's digital department joining us here. OTB, ESPN, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria. More on the defense, Cody. For a team that crashes the board as aggressively as LSU does, and for a while there, consistently night in, night out, dominating that stat line, how do you explain the defensive ebbs and flows that they go through up to this point?
You know, I think it's mostly just their point of attack defense, their on-ball defense. What I really noticed against Missouri was the lack of ball pressure. And I don't know if that's personnel. I don't know if that's Will Wade telling certain guys to sag off. I know that LSU is probably the most prepared team in the SEC, maybe in the country. And so they know the opposition personnel as well as anybody. And so sometimes when they're kind of sagging off and not put pressure on the ball, that's maybe something that they're game planning for. They're not worried about that guy's shooting ability. But I thought the second half, the difference against Missouri, other than taking away the middle of the floor, was they got up in people's faces and guarded, and they pressured them. Like, even if you're not a shooter, just having ball pressure on you makes you uncomfortable. It makes passing angles more difficult. I thought LSU did a much better job of that in the second half. And part of that, too, is foul trouble. Like, LSU, because of their lack of depth, it's hard to get into people and press them because you get that first foul and like, okay, I can't foul again, or I got to go to the bench. You know, so I think that's kind of the balance they're trying to find right now. And that's why Charles Manning is going to help so much, because he's not only another guy where you feel a little more comfortable and you're not as worried about foul trouble, but he's exceptional at getting in your face and being the point of attack on defense and making things uncomfortable for the offense. And so I think his addition is going to be really important.
Speaking of foul trouble, for the first time, it felt like in a long time, we saw Darius Days play without being in foul trouble against Missouri, and he probably played his best game. He had two huge offensive rebounds late in the game, and, you know, as on brand, he hit big shot after big shot. Days, what's he mean to this team coming down the stretch?
Yeah, I love Darius Days. I said last year, and I kind of got some pushback on it. I thought he was a potential future SEC player of the year type of talent, just because of his ability, yes, and all the things he can do offensively and rebounding, but also I just think he's a guy that's going to stick around for a few years, just in terms of his makeup. He's huge to this team. I mean, he's unbelievably efficient on offense. I think I saw he's second in the nation in two-point percentage. That little jump hook that he hit to kind of ice the game from 12 feet, that's the hardest shot in basketball. Yeah. I mean, the mid-range jumper is hard enough as it is and inefficient enough as it is. But to add it with like the little baby hook that he did, and he makes that shot all the time. I mean, he makes that shot all the time.
Should he have taken that shot at that point when he gets that board?
Well, so if I remember correctly, the shot clock didn't reset. Now, he could have probably held it for a couple more seconds and gotten a better look, but I think he probably didn't know the shot clock at that point. He probably was thinking it was more like 2 seconds. I think it was more like six at that point. But he sunk it, and he's got that ability to just, you know, he's got that quick little baby hook. He can put it on the floor a little bit more now. He can step out and knock down the three. That's been up and down for him. But the biggest thing is his effort. I mean, he just goes and goes and goes, and he gets these offensive rebounds. He has so many big ones, and that creates offense for himself. It creates offense for his teammates. It gets the PMAC on his feet, which is important. It gets the crowd into it. I mean, he got a huge standing ovation when he came out of the game with like 6 minutes left. And he had a good game, and he played well. It wasn't like he had huge numbers, but people could just appreciate his effort. And just his combination of effort and efficiency is incredibly rare for a college basketball player. And if he can stay out of foul trouble, which he did a better job of, I think he only played 24 minutes, but he stayed out of foul trouble for the most part. If he can do that, it just opens this team up in so many ways because of what he can do, not only as a scorer, but as a guy that's going to get you extra possessions.
Cody, how are you feeling about the Pelicans, man, the other basketball team here in South Louisiana?
Yeah, I'm pumped, man. I really like this team before the season. They got so many fun young players, and I thought Zion would be really good. I didn't think he'd be this good. I mean, he's just – go back and look at AD's rookie year stats. Like, remember how hyped everyone was about AD? Did he average like 14 points a game as a rookie?
Yeah.
Like Zion, he's just so advanced. He's so efficient. And this is just like the very, very, very thinnest surface of his potential. It's incredibly exciting.
Bro, what about Lonzo? I saw you tweeting. We were tweeting back and forth about Lonzo the other day. How impressed are you with how his game's evolved?
I love Lonzo. Like, I never watched Lonzo with the Lakers. I remember watching him with UCLA and liking his game. That guy knows how to play basketball. Like, if Javante Smart is listening right now, I'm sure he's not because he's not a morning person, and I doubt he's big into sports radio.
He's a big OTB guy, but yeah.
I would highly encourage him to watch Lonzo Ball because Lonzo does some things that if, like, Javante could add that to his game, it would take him to a different level. Just the way that he moves the ball in transition, just always looking ahead to pass it, moving the ball fast. He's so high IQ, man. I love Lonzo. He's so much fun to watch.
How beautiful was the Skylar Euro step under 2 minutes?
Okay, so Skylar does that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the spin move and the Euro step are Skylar's calling cards. But for him to bust it out in that moment, it was beautiful. The celebration was beautiful. He's done that little, I don't know what you call that, like a little skip or something. He's done that a couple times, which is not typical of Skylar. He's not exactly a celebration guy, but it was fun to see. And look, LSU's guards as a whole, and even their bigs, their footwork is maybe the best in the country. Greg Heyer is LSU's assistant coach. He might be the best player developer in the country. They work on that stuff all the time, before practice, after practice. They're so good, their guards and their bigs, really. With their footwork around the rim, it's unbelievable.
I tell Heyer all the time, he should put his one-on-one workouts on some type of program that can be bought online in teaching tools. His one-on-one tutoring of bat. I mean, I've seen him and Skylar working out. It's as impressive as you'll find at any level. All right, real quick before we get you out of here, if you had to put a seed on LSU today, where would they be in March?
They're probably a 5 right now, with some upward mobility. The lack of quad one wins in the non-conference probably puts a ceiling on them, but probably a solid 5 right now, and that's what they're fighting for at this point. They're fighting for an SEC championship. And they're fighting to get that seed as good as possible because last year, you know, they were a 3 seed, and then you run into a 2 seed in the Sweet 16. That makes life a little more difficult. There's a big difference between being, you know, a 4 and a 5. I mean, you see that every year with 5-12 upsets in the NCAA tournament. So I think they're probably a 5 right now with a fighting chance to get 4, and then if they get really hot, maybe they can sneak to that 3 range as well.
Boot Up, the podcast. They can find it everywhere, Apple, Android, wherever they get their podcast.
Yep, anywhere you subscribe to the podcast, it'll show up.
Boot Up the podcast, Cody Worsham from the digital department from LSU. Check it in. Thanks, man.
All right, guys, thanks.